Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
On August 24th, the one thing I'm not going to do is give you my Super Bowl prediction. Not yet. Not now. Just not my deal. However, I will tell you this, and I'm not looking to make it about me. It's never about me. But was I or was I not the one that started the Jacksonville hype machine last year with multiple takes on that team at a time when nobody was talking about that team? Nobody. So, because I did that, and I got a lot of respect for that, now I'm getting a lot of questions. Questions like, hey, Rome, who is the team to check this year? Who are you thinking about this year? Who is your team this year? And I've seen the questions, and I've held off answering those questions until now. Because today, on August 24th, I am now officially ready to put myself out there, to throw in with somebody. And I'm here to tell you the team that I'm loading up on. I am here to say, on August 24th, Cleveland, this is for you.
This is for you.
That's right. After getting the Jags train rolling last year, I am now getting ready to start shoveling some coal for the Cleveland Browns this year. Yes, you heard me. The Cleveland Browns. And this is not just some Hard Knocks bump. This is a game three of the preseason bump. This is a Cleveland 5, Philadelphia nothing bump. And save me your whack, tired baseball score jokes. Not cool, not fresh, not funny. Tired. Really, really tired. About as tired as saying that Cleveland set its own lake on fire. I mean, wake up, look around you. Look at how Cleveland just dominated the defending world champs. Now, I'm not a big law of transitive properties guy, but I'm pretty sure that means that Cleveland gets the Lombardi after last night's game. Doug Peterson is as close to an offensive genius as you're ever going to find. Yet last night, he had no answers for the Browns. Stymied, perplexed, hell, flummoxed. Look it up, clones. Do not step to my vocabulary. It's world class. And so is that Browns defense, seemingly. As an example, remember when Nick Foles turned Bill Belichick's defense inside out in the Super Bowl? Yeah, well, Greg Williams just wore Nick Foles as a hat, completely clowned him. Two interceptions and a fumble. One of the all-time great stories in NFL postseason history just got owned in the preseason by a dude who used to preach, affect the head.
Affect the head.
Affect the head. Now I know what you're thinking. Come on, Rome, relax. It's only the preseason, right? But it's week three of the preseason, which makes it the most important week of the preseason. And I know your next thought. Hey, Rome, they nearly lost Tyrod. Tyrod Taylor to a hand and injury. And Baker Mayfield to a concussion. In the same game, same old Browns. Wrong. Not the same old Browns. Brand new Browns. I mean, yeah, that would have been a complete nightmare. And very Browns-like to lose their top two quarterbacks in the third preseason game. And it did almost happen. And I'm still not sure why Taylor was sent back into a meaningless preseason game with an injury. But the bottom line is, it didn't happen. He went back in. Mayfield continues to make plays and stockpile quality tape. Yes, the old Browns would have lost Taylor and Mayfield and ended up with Drew Stanton and something called Brogan Roback at quarterback. I'll be honest, I'm not even sure if Brogan Roback is a real person or a kid that Jeff in Richmond made up when he tried to name check my son Logan.
Brogan Low.
Rogan Lowe.
Rogan Lowe.
Brogan Lochak.
Rogan Lowe.
Yeah, whoever the hell that guy is, he would have turned into an interception machine for the old Browns. Again, these are not the old Browns. These are the new Browns. Now, they're not going to go 0-16 this year. They're not. Book it. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to run the table the right way right now. I'm not even saying that they're necessarily world beaters right now. What I'm saying is this is no longer the team that you want to see unless you want to get punched in the face. So maybe it's the buzz of a preseason shutout talking. Maybe I'm still fired up from that Brad Paisley motivational speech where he talked about Brian Sipe. Maybe it's that. I just know this. I'm all in with the Browns. And if you squinted last night, you could see flashes of the early 90s Cowboys. And that's not me talking. That's Troy Aikman talking. And if Troy Aikman is comparing your team to his early 90s Cowboys, then I am listening. Yeah, I know. I know. Cleveland did not exactly light up the scoreboard with that offense. But they don't have to. They let the defense do the work, starting with Myles Garrett, who absolutely wrecked shop. Don't ask me. Ask the poor Eagle who tried to block him. That guy said, quote, "I got my ass kicked. Myles is a great player. I was out of control today. I just got beat today," end quote. And believe me, this is not going to be the only guy saying that this season, because Myles Garrett is going to kick a lot of people's asses. Get used to hearing that from offensive linemen around the NFL. Garrett is for real. So are the Browns. I don't just throw in with anybody. They have to earn it. The Jags did, and they made me look really, really good. And now the Browns have earned it, and I expect them to make me look really, really good. Browns fan, I started this show with a positive take on you earlier this week, and you didn't say jack. You didn't do jack. So I'm going to ask you once again. I'm going to ask you right now what I did then. Where the hell are you, and is this your year? Are you too beaten down to come in here and claim this crew is your own? Are you waiting for something horrible to happen? Because it always does. Or is this the crew to make you forget about Braun leaving again? Is Juice Landry the new LeBron and the guy who's going to put your entire town on your back? Because he's not afraid to tell you he is that guy. Damn it, Cleveland. Am I talking to myself here, or just giving Steeler fan another reason to go upside your head? Damn, Cleveland. This is for you.
This is for you.
Pick up the phone. I'm in Southern California hyping you. Where are you? We are joined by Charles Robinson. Charles, what's going on? Good morning.
Yeah, sorry about that. A little late. In the spirit of Urban Meyer, can I blame the medication?
You can, man. You can, right? I would. Charles Robinson joining us. In fact, why don't we start right there? Like, I know you're focused on the NFL right now, but in the spirit of medication, Ohio State might not be a part of your focus, but from an investigative reporter standpoint, what do you make of how Urban Meyer and Ohio State have dealt with the entire situation?
Well, I mean, I think we've all seen the blowback because of how poorly it was handled. But to me, what really sticks out about this is the text message stuff. The fact that they know he had a conversation about wiping his phone after, you know, the previous year, and he did it. And somehow that wasn't considered obstructive in nature in a way that it got him a more severe punishment than perhaps it should have. I think what's interesting is we're seeing athletic departments in college know not to commit things to paper. They know not to commit things to text messages. And now they're having active conversations about wiping out records that might prove something that, you know, they just don't want out in the public eye. The whole thing was horrible, but that report was stunning. I actually think they did a good investigation. I just don't think the ruling really matches it.
Yeah, what about that investigation? They also do an investigation, which you deem good. However, they did not make it available to the media for that press conference. That was kind of convenient. That was a little bit cute.
Yeah, I mean, he would have gotten shelled. And frankly, the fact that he gets the question about, you know, an alleged victim, do you have anything to say? And, you know, he basically says, I'm sorry, we're all in this situation. I mean, he handled it poorly without that report being available to reporters. Had that report been available to reporters, I don't know. I can't imagine how – I mean, it would have been a bloodbath. And I think that's why that happened. They knew there was just no way they could expose him to those kinds of questions. And now they won't really ever have to.
Labor Day is almost here, and you better have Masterbuilt on your back deck ready to go. Craft your masterpiece and enjoy a slow smoke meal with a Masterbuilt smoker. Whether you're a beginner or a seasoned professional, you'll find that just right smoker for your backyard cookout. It's easier and it tastes better than grilling. Load the smoker up with your favorite foods, set the time and temp, and walk away. Spend more time with your family and friends. It's available at Home Depot, Lowe's, Sam's Club, Academy, Bass Pro, and Cabela's. For more information, tips, and recipes, visit masterbuilt.com. Charles Robinson joining us, senior NFL reporter for Yahoo. I agree with you. Listen, shifting to the NFL, we can get to the helmet rule in a minute because that's been the biggest story of the preseason, but I want to start with something a little more interesting, a little more exciting, Deshaun Watson. Now, you made the comparison between Watson and Carson Wentz. What have you seen that makes you feel that way?
Well, he's been limited in terms of his exposure this preseason, but you can see how fast he's processing right now. I mean, I've been to practices, obviously saw the preseason games, and I think that was the one thing about Carson Wentz. If you ask guys in the NFL, particularly their personnel department, why did he get so much better from year one to year two? And they will tell you, look, when we drafted him, we knew he was really smart. It was just how fast was he going to start to process what he was seeing from the defenses in front of him. The Texans have that same feel for Deshaun Watson right now. He's really, despite the injury, he's had a chance to really immerse himself from an education standpoint, and he's simply recognizing things really quickly and getting the ball out of his hands really fast. And his preseason game against the 49ers, his three incompletions all hit receivers in the hands. I mean, he should have been perfect in that game, really, and I think that's what has them excited. They have a defense they think could be pretty good. It's just, can this kid take the astronomical step forward? And I think deep down, even though they might not say it publicly, I think they feel like he could potentially be a dark horse MVP candidate this season.
Charles Robinson joining us here in the jungle. All right, so let's circle back to the helmet rule for a minute. What do you make of how the league has handled this over the past few months and this week in particular?
I've said that this is, what's amazing to me about this rule is it's so bad. It's literally united all the people who usually fight players, writers, coaches, personnel guys. We all typically fight with each other or, bicker, and this is this one thing that's kind of united everyone against the NFL because this rule is so poor. And I think they knew when they instituted this, that's part of why they've talked about like sort of this three-year continuum, because they know it's going to take a number of years and really kind of going through the first crushing wave of criticism to get beyond it. But to me, when the NFL comes out and they says, we're going to send out another video essentially highlighting some of the instruction with the tackling and why flags are being called, that's the NFL sending a message to everyone else. We're not backing away from this. You may hate it. It may change how football is played, but that's where we're standing, and this is where we're going with it. They need it to filter downward, though. That's the one thing that the NFL can't control, having this called both in college and high school, because players really need to re-educate themselves how they're going to tackle, and they can't just do that when they reach the highest levels of the game. They have to start with high school and college to get to the point where we're not going to see guys continuously flag.
Charles Robinson joining us. I've got to ask you about Dez Bryant. Let me go in that direction for a minute. He leaves Cleveland without a contract. So what does his future look like in the league? And how much interest is there in Bryant from other teams?
I still think the Browns are interested in him. I think they're pissed that he slow rolled them early on. I was in camp a couple of weeks ago, and I ran into a personnel guy, and he said, what's going on with Dez and the Browns? They have been trying to get him in for a couple of weeks, and he's blowing them off. And then finally John Dorsey came out and said, we can't get this guy to call us back. And I think that was because Dez was dead set on either signing with a contender or an NFC East team. This is essentially what he had targeted. He passed up a good contract with the Baltimore Ravens, really, for where he's at in his career. And none of that has materialized. So I still think that those talks are ongoing with the Browns. I think they put him on the back burner because they know his market is so thin right now. And I wrote recently, look, him saying what he's saying about the Patriots right now, Tom Brady's always been my favorite player. Bill Belichick, as a strategist, is one in a million. That's desperation. That's Dez looking at depth charts, trying to figure out what contender could use me and let me do whatever I can to get that talk started.
I mean, so what is that? Why is there not more interest in Dez Bryant?
He has – okay, so I ran into an evaluator that broke down all of his film, and I was at a camp, and Des came up and I said, what's going on? I'm like, well, I know the Cowboys have told me his film is bad. He wasn't winning a lot of his matchups. I said, but what does that really mean? And this evaluator just told me, look, he's a four-route guy. Up until this point in his career, he succeeded by running four routes, which is like, you know, the dig route, the back shoulder, the slant, and then some variation of a 50-50 ball that's either a post-corner route or something that matches him up against the boundary against the guy where he wins a 50-50 ball. This evaluator said, look, I looked through his film since his foot injury in 2015. He doesn't win these anymore. He used to win them. He doesn't win them anymore. And if he can't win those, when a receiver reaches that point in his career, he's got to start to do a lot of little things to make up for lost athleticism, lost speed, whatever it is. And Dez isn't that guy. He's not going to re-educate himself at 29 going on 30. You can't count on him doing that. And then there's the whole other flip side of Dez, which is he going to be a good locker room guy? The Cowboys did not feel like he was a good locker room guy at the end. Is he going to be an effort guy? They didn't feel like he was fully an effort guy. And then is he going to drill down on the little details to run really precise routes and what you need in your system? They didn't feel he was going to do that. So why would any other team believe it? He's desperate right now. He'll tell anybody, I will do what you need me to do, because he wants to get a job and prove himself. I just don't know what team really, unless they're in a situation where they're getting zero production from their depth chart and they really need to help a quarterback, is going to be in that situation where they want to expose Dez to the rest of the guys. Like, look, I'll ask you, the Browns, you've seen Josh Gordon, you got Callaway, that wide receiver core, do you want to stick Dez in the middle of that and hope for the best? How do you feel about
it? I don't. I understand that they want as many weapons as they possibly can, and they want to flood the field, but I would not do it. I don't see the upside. Like you said, he's 29 going on 30. I'd say 29 going on 35, and I don't think the guy's a good locker room guy. I mean, he's going to say all the right things right now to get a
right
job until you get him in there, and then he doesn't
Absolutely.
Get the ball. To me, it's not worth it.
It's and you and I both know, we've covered sports long enough in the NFL in particular, when you bring in a guy like that at that age, if he can't give you that elite play on the field, you need him at least to be a program guy, especially if you have young guys on the roster like Callaway, Njoku. You've got guys who are going to be watching Dez and saying, okay, let me see, how is this guy conducting himself? What is he getting away with? And I just don't know if you want to bring a player in like that and expose some of the younger players to, if Dez pushes back. And frankly, I think the offensive coordinator, Todd Haley, who does not have a good track record with wide receivers over a long period of time in terms of how he grinds on them mentally, even if you sign Dez, I don't think you can pair him with Todd Haley for more than really one season.
Or more than 1 month. I mean, if you're trying to create a culture there, I don't think that Dez is the guy that's going to help you create that culture. And I can see those guys knocking heads for sure. Just as I could see you and I talking about this for another half hour, but we are out of time. Charles, appreciate you, man. Great job. Nice to have you back on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Sorry I was late.
Everybody knows about the risks of driving drunk. You could get in a crash. People could get hurt or killed. But let's take a moment and look at some surprising statistics. Almost 29 people in the United States die every single day in alcohol-impaired vehicle crashes. That's one person every 50 minutes. Even though drunk driving fatalities have fallen by a third in the last three decades, drunk driving crashes still claim more than 10,000 lives every single year. Drunk driving can have a big impact on your wallet also. You could get arrested and incur huge legal expenses. You could possibly even lose your job. So what can you do to prevent drunk driving? Plan a safe ride home before you start drinking. Designate a sober driver or call a taxi. If someone you know has been drinking, take their keys and arrange for them to get a sober ride home. We all know the consequences of driving drunk, but one thing is for sure. You're wrong if you think it's no big deal. Drive sober or get pulled over. All right, so again, a headline that I wish that I never saw, that I can't unsee. Headline reads, Ben Affleck stopped at Jack in the Box on the way to rehab. Let me read that one more time so we can all process that together. Ben Affleck stopped at Jack in the Box on the way to rehab. Now, you know that's a loaded headline when rehab is not even the most disturbing part. Because going to rehab is not disturbing at all. It's smart. It's responsible. It's the thing to do if you need that. That's not disturbing. That's good. That's encouraging, not disturbing. And apparently he does need that, because the gossip rags say this dude is in a very bad way ever since his longtime girlfriend split with him. But of all the headlines that I've seen in my days of doing this, I can't really remember one that I would rather have my name in less. Like, Jim Rome stopped at Jack in the Box on the way to rehab. Now, believe me, nothing against J-Bos and those wet envelopes of cat food that they call tacos. But my last meal on the way to inpatient rehab is going to be at Javier's. Or In-N-Out, not the box, not J-Bos. I mean, Ben, my man Ben really has to be in a bad, bad place to want to pile drive his gut with taco shells that could double as prison shanks. Or maybe he's a buttery Jack guy. Hell, if you see these pics, he looks like a buttery Jack guy. Like I said, the rehab part of the story is not so startling. It's not like it's the first time he's been there. Probably won't be like the last time he's been there. But it's refreshing that he's going there. This is what you need. If you need help, ask for help. It's available. I like this. The part that I don't like as much, the photo of his ex-wife, Jennifer Garner, with the no-look handing off of a bag of Jack in the Box. Now, that is startling. If a picture is worth 1,000 words or a few hundred bucks, this one is worth 1,000 takes. Freaking Jennifer Garner, who was allegedly stepped out on for the nanny, soccer mom style, passing a bag of fast food to her overgrown 46-year-old child in the back seat. It's incredible. If you haven't seen the photo, it is a must. If you haven't seen the photo, dial into CBS Sports Network right now and you will see the photo. Garner in the front seat with an unnamed woman riding shoddy, and Ben Affleck, sweaty as can be, in the back seat, alone. Three people, one bag. Three people, one bag, which means the other two were not participating. Well, at least not eating. That pit stop at the box was solely for Ben. And the smell left in the car when he's done inhaling the contents of that bag solely for Jen. Now, why the third person? Why the other unnamed woman in the car? What is her role? Great question. Apparently, she served a purpose, and it was not for carpool lane access. They didn't need that. Her job, apparently, on this trip to rehab was to get out of the car and make Ben's order. How about that? But then again, Big Ben wasn't getting out to make that order. Jen was not getting out to make that order. They needed somebody. Imagine saying to that woman, "So what do you do? What do you do for a living?" I work for Jen and Ben. Oh, no kidding. What do you do? When we take Ben to rehab, somebody's got to order him as Jack in the Box. It ain't going to be Big Ben or Little Jen. It's going to be me. Nice of Ben to let her ride in the front. But then again, I'd probably want to be in the back seat alone with my Jack in the Box too, if I was the only one. I really wish these people had hit the drive-thru. I would have loved to have seen the reaction of the employee who handed a sack of box to Jennifer freaking Garner and Ben Affleck. And I would have loved to have seen if Jay Garn whipped out a Capital One card to pay for it while asking the pizza face kid inside the window, "What's in your wallet?" It's been a rough go for Ben. Batman v Superman, the nanny, the beach photos, the breakup, and now the all-time declaration of apathy by backseat crushing Jack in the Box. While your ex-wife is good enough and classy enough to shuttle you to rehab. Again, don't get my take twisted. I'm happy this guy is getting the help he needs. I commend anybody for doing that. It's important. It's smart. It's responsible. It is the right choice. Good on him for doing that. My only advice would be, when Jennifer picks you up, after you finish up that treatment, maybe you stop at a Tender Greens on the way home and walk proudly through the front doors and order a damn salad all day. Every damn day. No dressing, no croutons. Order a damn salad every damn day. Stay up, B. We're all rooting for you. Hurricane season is underway across most of the country, bringing extreme wind and rain with little to no warning. It is critical, then, to make sure your generators, power washers, chainsaws, John boats, and other emergency equipment are ready to use when you need them most. Whether you live in a high-impact area or not, planning in advance is a critical step in hurricane preparedness. Stabil, America's number one fuel stabilizer and ethanol treatment, making sure your equipment starts when you need it the most. Neil Brown is my guest. Neil, good morning. Nice to have you on. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Appreciate you having me on.
It's great to have you on. So you're coming off that 11-win season, which I mentioned, which included a conference championship and a bowl win and a win at LSU. I get that every season is different, but do you feel like there's some momentum and energy that carries over from last year into this year?
For sure. We've got a lot of momentum. Not only we got 21 wins last 2 years, also opened up a brand-new facility. Football-only facility that's in our end zone. It's the Boise game on Saturday will be the first time it's been open to the public. So we're excited about a lot of things, a lot of positive momentum. We've obviously got a tough opening game here against Boise.
I'm going to ask you about that game in a minute, but let me ask you this. When you first got there, the program had not had a winning season in 5 years, but now you've got back-to-back double-digit winning seasons. So what did you see in the program before you came that let you know that would be a place where you could have that kind of success?
I was here 4 years as an assistant. The last two, I was here from 2006 through 2009. The last of those two, I was the offense coordinator, and we won four conference championships in a row. We sit in lower Alabama, and right in the middle of a four states that have traditionally strong high school football: the state of Alabama, state of Florida, Georgia, and then Mississippi. And then there's junior college hotbeds in Mississippi as well. So we'd won in the past. There's tradition here. We're really close, within a 3-4 hour radius to a lot of really good football players, and our fan. We have a solid fan base that's passionate about football. So I knew that we could get it back going. I didn't. Jim, I'll tell you, I'm not sure I envisioned us winning 21 games in year two and three, but I felt like that we could get this and contend year in year out for our conference championship.
We're talking to Troy head coach Neil Brown. So that brings us to the following Saturday, where we've got a game coming up against Boise State. Listen, you never want to put too much on a single game, but how significant a moment is this for your program?
It's huge. You know, we played them last year. We lost 24-13 and fumbled going in to take the lead in the fourth quarter. So this is huge. And I think that Boise, in my opinion, is the preeminent Group of Five program. They're probably the favorite right now to be the Group of Five representative in the New Year's Six bowl games. So I think it's significant in the fact that if we can win that game, that puts us at a level where we'll have the opportunity to potentially be nationally ranked early in the season. I think the earlier you get ranked, the more momentum you can gain, as Central Florida did last year. So I think it puts us in the hunt. I think the winner of our game is one of the leaders for that Group of Five representation at the end of the year.
No doubt. Neil Brown joining us. Now, Neil, Bruce Feldman of The Athletic had a really interesting piece on your program and the way you've gone about developing it and your players. But the thing is, you're not just looking to develop your players. You're also looking to develop your staff. So as part of that, you began a book club. I got to know, where did the idea come from and how did the coaches react when you first brought that up?
Well, the book club, it sounds kind of a nerd of it, doesn't it, Jim? When Bruce brought it up to me, wanted to do the article, I said, man, you're gonna give me a black eye in the coaching profession because I'm reading. And he said, but it really what we did is we used this book, and we've done it for 3 years now. We use the book club just as a means to bring everybody together. And it's about alignment. I think alignment is critical within any organization, especially in football, because you have your staff, And then you've got all your support levels from academics to athletic training to administration to equipment, all these different aspects. And I think it's critical that everybody send the same message to down to the players. So we did these books just to bring everybody together during the summer where all our messaging was the same. And the byproduct of it is we've got some really good information from the books we read. And I think we are more aligned as a program than some of our competitors.
We're talking to Neil Brown. You know, going into last season, the book selection was Legacy, which is about the All Blacks rugby team. What is it about that team and their culture that attracted you to them?
Well, the book's it's very well written. And the All Blacks are the most successful professional organization in the world. And the reason that we chose that book heading into our 17th season is we'd had a lot of success in 16. We'd won 10 games, which was the most wins at that time in Division I history. And theirs is all about culture and protecting your culture. And one of their main sayings is better people make better All Blacks. And that was something we felt like was something that we believed in our program, is that better people made better Troy football players. And that's something that we built on. And the other thing, too, is there's a chapter in that book that discusses about, you know, if you have to wait, if you realize that you need to change, it's usually too late, and changing while you're on top. And we really went about that last year. We were significantly different offensively and defensively in 2017 compared to 16. And we did that and even raised our level of play.
In other words, we're talking about the notion of, quote, sweeping the sheds, right?
Yeah, no doubt. And I think if I'm not wrong, you'll know this too. I think there's the Japanese national soccer team in the World Cup. They left a note and cleaned their locker room after they got beat in their final World Cup game. And it brought some attention to that notion of sweeping the sheds. And that's something too, is leave a legacy, leave the program better shape than when you came. And that's something we try to instill in our players.
We're talking to Neil Brown, and they did do that. They cleaned the locker room. Listen, one of the other things that you've said is you want your team to lead the country in high fives. Now, it might sound a little bit hokey, but it's a sign of the love and the culture that I think you've developed. Earlier in camp, you had a moment where Cameron Kay, the long snapper, was given a full scholarship, and it was presented to him by his mother. What was that moment like for you and for your team?
Those are some of my favorite events. We're able to reward somebody that's earned a scholarship. You know, most of our team is recruited and or selected by us to be representatives. And the walk-ons, I think, are always the kind of the backbone of your program. The guys that come and put in the time and effort and earn scholarships. And Cameron Kay was our starting long snapper last year, and he earned that opportunity. One of our hardest workers. And we did it 2 years ago where we brought the families back and had them present the scholarships. And that's what we did with his mother. And we actually did it where he's a long snapper. He snapped it to the punter. The punter handed the ball to his mom. We snuck the mom in from behind, and our punter, Tyler Sumter, handed her the football, and she actually held his scholarship paper. And that was a special moment. That's one of my favorite times of the year is being able to give it. We did it to a linebacker here earlier in the week as well. That's one time.
I was prepared to move on. Get to the next thing. But apparently Ohio State honks are not ready to move on. And I'm not just talking about mouth-breathing Buckeye fans on Twitter. I'm talking about athletic director Gene Smith's attorney, Rex Elliott. Safe to assume that if I ever bring back the Rex streak, Rex Elliott is not going to be a part of it. Elliott jumps on Facebook yesterday to declare, and I quote, "Two great men fell on the sword for a university they dearly love." Wait, what? Two great men fell on the sword for a university they dearly love. I mean, did dude try to tell Siri what to type and did she jam him up? Or dude was done in by autocorrect, right? Because there's no way in hell dude just thumbed that out on his phone or hammered that into some keyboard. It's got to be a typo or a misspeak or both. But nope, it's not. He really went there because a little bit later in that same post, Rex wrote, quote, "Two men who don't deserve the public flogging, but who agreed to take one for the team. So this great university can move forward with all of its amazing athletic and academic initiatives. Are you freaking kidding me with that? Do we really have to have this debate all over again after we had all started to turn the page on the disaster that is Herb and the Ohio State? I mean, you really want to have this discussion all over again? I'm telling you, I want to move on. But these tools do not want to move on. All right, you want to have this conversation again? Great, you got it. Let's have this conversation again. This is Urban Meyer's legacy from now on. Whatever he does on the field no longer matters. This scandal defines Urban Meyer and Ohio State. Look, I know that Rex wants to have his clients back. I know he wants to make Gene and Urban seem like martyrs so that this great university can move forward with all of its amazing athletic and academic initiatives. However, is this not the same great university that's already dealing with more than 100 allegations of sexual misconduct involving a school doctor? Are we talking about the same great university that is facing a federal investigation into how the school handled those allegations? And is this also not the same great university that has a former coach of the Ohio State University Diving Club being sued for sexually abusing a former athlete? And is it the same great university that shut down its sexual civility and empowerment unit after an external review of reports that it did not handle complaints properly? So, when you talk about the university moving forward with all of its amazing athletic and academic initiatives, which ones are you talking about? Are you moving forward from this scandal or all of the scandals? I mean, how freaking blind and myopic can you be? Are you talking about the same great Urban Meyer who, the moment evidence was produced that he lied to the media, started to delete text messages? That Urban Meyer? Because if he did nothing wrong, wouldn't he want those same text messages that he moved so quickly to delete? Wouldn't he want to have them to prove his innocence if he did nothing wrong? Are these the same two martyrs who, when Courtney Smith alleged that Zach Smith assaulted her in 2015, met and decided to leave the matter to law enforcement instead of telling compliance as required? And is it the same Urban Meyer who already knew that Zach Smith had a 2009 incident but did not tell Gene Smith about that when Smith was hired in 2012? And didn't mention it when similar allegations arose in 2015. Is that what you call taking one for the team and falling on a sword for this alleged amazing institution? And what about the medication-induced memory loss that conveniently absolved Urban Meyer of all responsibility for lying to reporters repeatedly at Big Ten Media Days? Did he lie like that because he loved this great university and its amazing academic initiatives? Hey, look, the great news is that medication, because of that, now the guy's got a get-out-of-jail-free card, and he can waive it anytime somebody ever questions him about anything ever again. Because this great university bought that excuse, too. And trust me, I'm going to try that. If something doesn't go my way, I'm going to lie out my ass the way Meyer did, and then just say, oh, I'm not lying, I just don't remember, you know, because of account of the meds I'm on. I don't lie, I slam meds. And of course, as always happens in matters like these, Rex Elliott deleted the Facebook post after it went up. You know, as if Gene Smith's attorney weighing in with that garbage was not enough, then Zach Smith took a break from going to strip clubs, buying sex toys, allegedly assaulting women, photographing his junk in the office and the White House so he could jump on Twitter. But I really don't give a crap what he had to say. And speaking of crap, I used to have back in the day something around here that we called the Piece of Crap Club. And I would induct members into the Piece of Crap Club. I disbanded that a long time ago. But if I were to start that thing up once again, there would be a lot of scarlet and gray at the first meeting of the Piece of Crap Club. Leave it alone. Man, morons, leave it alone. Leave it alone. Turn the page. Move forward. You are not the victims here. You are the losers here. And every time you talk or complain or defend your guy, Herb, or this amazing university, you remind everybody of the losers that you are. I'm not saying all of you are losers. I'm just saying those of you who continue to defend this guy and talk about this amazing university, you're the losers. Turn the page. Keep moving. Let it go. I'm trying to. I want to move ahead. Believe me, I did not want to go here again.
Sorry that we're in this situation.
I am too, Herb. And, honestly. But Gene Smith's attorney, Rex, was the one who brought this all up again with that Facebook post that he since deleted. Otherwise, I would not have had to do this again. Hey, believe me, I didn't want to. Left me no call whatsoever. Or left me no choice whatsoever. Matt Holliday, talking about what it's like to be back there. And really, it's amazing even to say it. Matt Holliday, Colorado Rocky. But if you go back a little bit, in late July, when you signed that minor league deal with the Rockies and you went to play in Grand Junction and then on to Albuquerque, like, what was going through your mind when you first signed that minor league deal?
Honestly, I didn't know how it was going to shake out. You know, I thought, you know, it was an organization I had a passion for. Obviously, spent the first 10 years of my professional career there, five in the big leagues and five in the minor leagues. I didn't really know how it was going to shake out. I wanted to take it day to day. I wanted to enjoy the process of it. I wanted to enjoy my time at Grand Junction and be very present with those young guys and get a chance to kind of experience some of the things that they are going through that I went through 15 years ago or more, you know, 20 years ago, I guess, for some of those kids. And then on to Albuquerque and just really, like I said, taking it day to day and trying to enjoy it and not really knowing where it was going. I was hoping to play well and get a chance to play back with the Rockies and get back to the major leagues and felt like I could do that. But, you know, my goal has been to enjoy this, have fun with it. I think in the last year and maybe the last few years of my career, I haven't enjoyed it enough and really, kind of taken it all in and had more fun. And I think as athletes, professional athletes, sometimes we take things a little too serious. We don't enjoy what we're doing. And I think my time away and you know, the few months this summer when I wasn't playing baseball and a little bit of a reflection time, I think that looking back in my career, I wish I'd had more fun and enjoyed the good moments more and not kind of dwelled on the hard ones as much. So that was my goal coming in and obviously to get a chance to be back in Denver and playing on the major league team in the middle of a pennant race and being back in Coors Field yesterday was a pretty cool moment for me and very surreal. And like I said, walking back into the Coors Field batter's box, it felt somewhat eerily very normal and comfortable, but at the same time, and thinking back and where my career has gone, it was pretty cool.
Matt Holliday joining us is really cool. What a great answer that was too, Matt. You know, it's not just that you were in the Rockies lineup yesterday for the first time in a decade, but you didn't have cleats that matched the team's color scheme, so you ended up wearing shoes from 2007. What was the story behind those spikes, and then how did it feel to get them on your feet once again?
Well, you know, I got called up from Albuquerque, and we were in El Paso, and all I had was the gray spikes, sort of road spikes, and they were all gray and would look kind of tacky with white, purple pinstripe uniforms. So, in talking with Mike Ponarelli, the equipment manager who I've known since, you know, he's been around the organization for 20-plus years. So we call him Tiny. Tiny texted me and said, what shoes do you have? And I said, well, unfortunately, all I have is my gray shoes. And he said, well, I'll try to find some 14s. And then he texted me back not long later and said, you know, no one on the team wears 14s. I'll send somebody out to dig sporting goods in the morning to try to find some 14s. And I said, well, you know, I've got long pants. I'll just pull them down over the grays. And then he texted me not long after that, and he said, I found these in my basement. And it was a picture of some that I wore in 2007 that I had autographed for him. So they had my name
Wow.
sort of autographed on the front of them. And then I showed up yesterday morning, and he had found some other ones that didn't have my name on them. That I might have worn them in the World Series in 07, looking back on some of those pictures. I had some 2007 sweet Nike custom cleats. They had number 5 on them, but Carlos had no problem with that. So I ended up wearing some cleats from 2007, I think I got to wear them again today since we won.
Have to. Everything about this story is great. Matt Holliday joining us, Rockies outfielder. So, Matt, you've had this amazing career. You've had some great moments, but I got to ask, what was it like in the bottom of the second inning when you came to the plate and you got a huge standing ovation? What was that moment like?
Well, the reception since I signed back with Colorado, just, you know, kind of from everybody that I've run into in Grand Junction to Albuquerque to, you know, people sort of on social media, just kind of just have been very receptive and excited and just sort of felt the love from the Colorado fans and sort of kind of expected and knew that there would be a really cool moment and stepping back in the box and knowing the kind of fans that the Rockies fans have and just my time here and how special it was and the things that we were able to accomplish here and go into the World Series in 07. I thought it would be a really cool moment, and then, you know, kind of, you know, you never know what to quite expect, but it was a really, like I said, a surreal time and a surreal day for me, really just a lot of emotions and adrenaline and you know, not much time to sleep and it being a day game, and it just kind of happened really fast, but it was a really cool moment. Obviously, I'm very appreciative and humbled by the reception from the Colorado fans, and it was cool, man. I'll be honest, as a guy that's played a long time and got a chance to do some really cool things, it was right up there with one of the coolest things, moments that I've had in my career.
And Matt, not to state the obvious, but you're having a blast, aren't you?
I really am, and that's been my goal. Like I said, I've got my two older boys now, 14 and 11, with me, and this is a time for them that they're going to remember and experience and just really want to enjoy it and savor it. And who knows? I may try to play again next year, but, you know, if this is it, I want to make sure that I enjoy this, you know, pennant race and being around the guys and getting a chance to kind of be where I was when I started. I feel good. My body feels great, which makes playing baseball a lot more fun. And any athlete will tell you, you know, if your body feels good and you feel like your skills are sharp, then the game is a lot of fun. And I feel really good right now. And, competing, just going out there and competing and trying to do things to help the team win. You're not worried about personal stats or sort of anything personal. This is, just for me, it's about having some fun and trying to help the Rockies do something they've never done, which is win a World Series. And there's a ton of talent around here, and I'm just happy to be part of it.
Talking to Matt Holliday for a few more moments, you know, when you talk about all the talent around there, you got to start with Nolan Arenado. He made no secret of the fact that he has studied you. He even mimics the finish of your swing. Earlier this week, he told everybody that he wanted you on this team. What did it mean to hear that from somebody like that?
Well, Nolan and I have been pretty close, you know, through Troy Tulowitzki. Nolan and I have become pretty close friends, and we talk hitting a lot. We text back and forth a lot. And, you know, I've really always wanted to play with him. You know, honestly, I kind of see myself and him a little bit as far as how he approaches the game. And, you know, he's a grinder. He loves the game. He eats, you know, he breathes, eats, and sleeps the game. He's just really such a competitive guy, and I've enjoyed watching him, you know, a bit from afar. And to have him say those kind of things and to reach out to me occasionally and we just talk hitting what a talent. And to get a chance, I'm really excited to watch him up close for the next month and get a chance, maybe longer, hopefully, you know, through the World Series, get a chance to watch this guy perform. And just the consistency over the last 3 years, just an absolute stud. And you know, I think that, hey, if he played in a bigger market, like a lot of guys, he would get more love for a lot of the awards and maybe his legacy. But I think people know what a tremendous talent. And, I can't say enough good things about him, and I'm excited to watch him.
People who know, he's an unbelievable talent, and his makeup is incredible, and the guy's got the work ethic to match. Matt, last thought. You mentioned the World Series a couple of times. You know what it's like to be in the World Series. I mean, to get this opportunity, which you've earned, is one thing, but to be in a spot with this team that's got a chance to make a deep run, what would it mean to get another shot at the World Series for you?
Well, it would be tremendous. I feel very blessed to have played in three and to have won one and to have a ring in my career. I know a lot of great players that never got that chance. And so I already feel like I've been tremendously blessed with what I've been able to be a part of in my career. But, you know, to kind of come full circle and to be a part of this team, for it to, you know, potentially to play in a World Series again with Colorado and maybe win one here would be out of this world cool. And something that, you know, would be hard. It'd be storybook. It would be hard for people to believe if you told the story. But I think there's the talent here to make a run like that. And hopefully that happens. That would be something awesome.
It's already a great story. Matt, you and I, as you mentioned, you and I have been talking for a number of years, dating way back to when you were there the first time. You sound awesome. I think it's a great story. Really nice to have you on the program, and thanks for sharing it with us. Matt, great to talk to you again.
Yeah, Jim, thanks for having me on. I love your show. It's always an honor to be on with you.
So, clones, how was the weekend? Hope you had a great one. What's going on? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome, live on a Monday. All right, very busy day. Great show for you. Let's get it going. If you like seeing or hearing dudes get snot bubbled, you will not be disappointed.
Yeah! Brings it outside, and there he goes! Touchdown, Browns!
Great crackback blocked by Jarvis Landry.
I'm just not sure you can take violence out of an inherently violent game.
Pride myself on being a complete receiver.
The league is trying to change the game, but it sure doesn't sound Landry is going to change.
We got a build down, though, on the two-yard line.
Lorenzo Alexander is my guest.
If I make a hit like that, I'm getting ejected from the game. Hands down, no questions asked. They would have been right to do so.
Email.
What's missing from this Bills team is a nasty attitude. Maybe I should join the coaching staff.
Teach him not to take crap from anyone.
Boy, Rick, that's not easy. What are you doing keeping a guy like that around? Who's taking pictures of his junk at work and at the White House, having sex with staffers, and having sex toys sent to the complex. Hey, Herb, explain yourself.
A Zach Smith level degenerate to actually open up the box in the office.
All those sex toys that guy ordered, who cares anyway? So
Yogi Roth is my guest. How are you doing and how great is ball?
I love that distinction. I'm going to keep hanging with that. I'm going to be the first four time. If there's ever competition, I want to get a call. I want to make sure that we just grow the lead as much as possible.
In the end zone. Yeah, that's really clever. I mean, what's next? Is she going to go on a date with Sidney Crosby and then put out a porno movie called Going Five Hole? Give me that.
Now you're done. Hey, Vic, were you about to claim your smoker?
Give me that.
Are you a scrub-ass university that's going to look the other way, or are you the Ohio State University? Because the punishments I'm hearing do not fit that crime. Do the right thing, Ohio State.
Ohio State sucks.
You went to Florida? Recruited Tim Tebow, but a lot of people forget he also had a murderer on his team as well, too.
I don't think anybody forgot that.
Jeff, what's going on?
I will die with that golden ticket in my cold, dead hands. Face it, Josh.
Can I have a golden ticket?
Yeah!
The ticket is mine.
We're like mirror images of each other. You know, my life is...
You guys win. The world is your rom-com. We're all just extras. Happy to be here.
The only thing it has to do with Romeo and Juliet is we want to do a mutual suicide every time we see those two together.
Nice job. I know you don't. Keep joining us. Now we see Laker jerseys all over town with James on the back.
It's amazing. You don't like the best player in the league unless he's on your team.
Knuckles said that the biter grabbed his wrist and began mowing down on his fingers. Plural.
With his teeth.
He said it sounded like someone chewing a freaking Dorito. It's the middle of the night. You're tossing. What's up, Hawk? I'm in a commercial break. Brad Paisley? Brian Sipe? Can you guys go out and win one for me? Because I'm a really big fan. And Bernie Kosar? And global warming? Nick Rolovich?
Romy. Hey, aloha, clone. Hanging out with Brittany in Soundworth Media Day in Vegas. What a job I got. I coach football in Hawaii.
No wonder this kid's undefeated. Who's going to knock this guy out or get him to tap when a damn power drill putting his scrotum into a spin cycle couldn't do it?
Don't worry, Jim. I'm not calling for a smoker. I'm just calling to smoke a fool.
Dennis Dodd joining me. You recently talked to my guy, Michael Franzese.
Yeah. Jim, I have to give you credit. Dropping your name helped me get the interview with Michael Franzese because I had heard him so many times on your show.
Nice.
And he was great.
I'm sorry that we're in this situation.
The press conference was a joke. Myers a disgrace. He apologized not to the alleged victim of domestic violence, Courtney Smith, but to his fans who, like Urban, think that he did nothing wrong. Brett McMurphy is my guest.
I am shocked that Urban Meyer was not fired.
So then what's his legacy and reputation going forward?
When things
got tough at Florida. He said he had a heart ailment, and when things got tough at Ohio State, he says now he has selective memory loss.
I'm pissed off at this, man. You went from a 10 to a 0.
Dabo Swinney is my guest. Winning has been prioritized over the players and the values of a school.
And they don't really love the guys. It's more love of winning. I mean, I want to win as bad as anybody, but I'd rather lose trying to do it right, you know, than to win knowing that you did.
And finally, if I'm going to pay $100 to watch Phil Mickelson play golf on pay-per-view, he damn well better be topless.
I don't mean it in any disrespect.
Because the exit velocity of those shrimp tacos is about Mach 9.
Charles, what's going on? Good morning.
Yeah, sorry about that. A little late. In the spirit of Urban Meyer, can I blame the medication?
You can, man. You can, right?
We call it schmammered.
Lauren's dad. Where's the honeymoon?
That I'm not sure about.
Dude, how's your speech? It's got to be better than this call, Lauren's dad.
Well, I've written some stuff down, yes.
Lauren is better than Lauren's dad. They tried to make me go to rehab. I said, no, no, no. Pickle is on my jumbo jack. And I would have loved to have seen if Jay Garn whipped out a Capital One card to pay for it while asking...
What's in your wallet?
Freaking Spud Webb.
I'm thinking no count. That's how I am.
You freeloading D-bag.
We've been two in front of the wormhole of those panties.
Bad girl.
God bless America.
It was a fish hook.
And I have been waiting so long to give you the right content.
Man, this smack talking game is hard, dog.
Harold Miner.
Go pull the tape.
Worm Dreams.
Good night now.
You know who he is. Mike in Indy. Mikey, what's up?
Hey, I'm doing good, Romy. I know those Masterbuilt smokers are excellent products, but it's not so much that I'm trying to win one. It's more that I'm calling to prevent Vic from winning one. Listen to Vic's desperation this week, calling three times to win it. That's why you got ninth place, three smack-offs in a row, bro. Try easier, Vic. And it's true that idiot got booted off of Twitter for the third time. He's like the Josh Gordon of Twitter. Keeps relapsing into his idiocy. Can't stay eligible. On the other end of the spectrum, you have me. My greatness is undeniable. I'm so great that when a legendary call goes down like Jeff in Southfield, everyone assumes it's me. Nerds in the UC Santa Barbara Reserve book room are analyzing me and Jeff's take cadence and call structure. Are you kidding me? These terms never existed until this Jeff in Southfield thing, and it's all due to my greatness. Take cadence and call structure. I keep getting phone calls from audio forensic specialists at Radio Shack trying to get me to say, Pinky Tuscadero. Are you kidding me? We're the great people at Masterbuilt, and I'm out.
Rack him. Hey, Mikey, I like that. You should come around more often.
Good night now!